Hi,
You're
everybody.
on.
I'm Don. I'm an alcoholic. If you can hear me, I think you can. Just give me the thumbs up, somebody, and that's great. And just remind me of the format here. When do I stop? Do I stop right at the hour or 15 minutes before the hour levy? All right.
Anything
I know
you
want to
do. Anything you want to do.
Well, I'd like to speak till tomorrow, but, you know, you don't want me to do that. So.
You never know. We might.
I'm half Irish. You don't want to tell me you don't care how long I talk. I'm just letting you know.
It's an hour meeting.
Okay. That's all I needed. That's beautiful. Anyway, wonderful to be back here with this wonderful group. I want to thank my good friend, Ralph for inviting me. I want to, but I can't. He's not here, so I won't thank him. But I know he's out doing his own thing, carrying the message of love and hope, as he is apt to do when he's asked. He's one of those guys that says yes, so one of the reasons I respect him so much. And I've been tasked this evening with talking briefly about our eighth and ninth proposal, our steps, which people, it's interesting. When you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, and if you're like me, you know, you're at the low point of your existence, and, you're detoxing in the rooms, and you're thinking, oh, my God, I mean, it's come to this. I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous, and you're just trying to make the best of a bad situation, and your head's just chewing on you about what a mess your life is. And, you know, they've got the window shades hanging down there with the steps and traditions printed on them, and you're sneaking looks over at the steps every now and then, and you're reading the steps, and you're thinking, oh, great, it's a God thing, great. But nothing shakes up a newcomer more than when they get to steps 8 and 9. You know, what I like to refer to as the oh hell no steps. Because when we're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, the idea that we're going to go back to the people we've harmed and we're going to make amends is a daunting task. It's an impossibility. It's beyond our reasonability. And thank God the steps are in order for a reason. And so if anything I say during this brief talk today, if you're new in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I want to thank Lisa for being here. Congratulate you on 28 good-looking days of sobriety. God bless you. I hope you stay sober forever, my dear. And if you hear anything that I say that's intimidating or, oh, my God, I don't think I can stay sober if I have to do that, I want to assure you that by the time you arrive at steps 8 and 9, things are going to change for you. You're going to have some things you didn't have when you got here. You're going to have a little bit of open-mindedness, a little bit of humility. And hopefully what the inventory process would have done for you, that process of discovery, is you would have realized that you were the chief architect of the damage that occurred in your life. And that along that path, other people were damaged. And you'll have a desire to clean the slate. You'll have a desire to make things right. You'll have a desire to get these things even. And I know by the time I was on steps 8 and 9, I had had that psychic change, that shift in attitude towards all those resentments that I had when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had that aha moment in my fifth step where I went, oh my God, it was me. It was me the whole time. And I could clearly see the devastation I had brought in the lives of others. Because I'm the typical newcomer that comes to Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a couple of things that are ununique. One, I don't have any resentments. That's number one. And number two, the only person I ever hurt was myself. And when I think about those things, when I'm new, I'm not in delusion. That's my truth when I'm new in Alcoholics Anonymous. But by the time I'm finished writing inventory and sharing it in a fifth step, I realize that I've had a resentment against just about everybody I've ever known. For I find some way to play the victim in every relationship I've ever had. If you're doing well, I feel bad about myself, and I resent you for that. You're too kind to me. You're too mean to me. You're too lenient with me. You're too firm with me. You're too tall with me. You're too short with me. There is no making a guy like me happy, because I'm the guy that demands that the world arrange itself so it'll suit me. And it's a fool's errand. The world and the people in it are just that, the world and the people in it. And rebelling against that fact will leave you in a resentful state. And then writing down in that fourth column, and particularly in the inventory, when I'm resolutely looking for my own mistakes and the things that I did wrong, when I set aside that old story, that old narrative that I've been carrying around in some cases for decades, I see clearly the devastation that I brought in the lives of others. And it broke me open. I'm not a guy that came out of the fifth step hopeful. I'm not a guy that came out of the fifth step feeling the nearness of my Creator, walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. I came out of the fifth step depressive. I came out of the fifth, I thought I did it wrong because I had heard so many people talk about how they felt like they lost 100 pounds. I felt like I gained the weight of the world in that fifth step because for the first time in my life, I had the truth. No justification, no rationalization, no explaining away what had really happened all those years. And so when I get to steps 8 and 9, which I got to immediately, really, because 6 and 7, you're in and out. You start to practice that stuff on a daily basis. Boom, I've got a list, and I'm going to start reading a little bit of the book just so we know where we're at here. Page 76, about halfway down. Now, we've done step 7. At this point, we've said the prayer. It says, now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have made a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we're willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. I'm in the sales game. We call that bait and switch. They're telling me I made my 8-step list all the way back when I made my 4-step resentment list. Nobody told me that. My sponsor didn't say that to me. My sponsor didn't say, by the way, be careful. Everybody that you write down here, you're going to end up making amends to. That's not fair. If I had known I was going to have to make amends to all those people, I would have written a lot less names. Nevertheless, it saves you a little bit of time. I like it when people are stuck on the 8-step for months. I'm like, how's that possible? You should have almost all your work done. Yeah, there'll be some people that don't make your resentment, your fear, your sex list, and your inventory. But by and large, that should cover 90% of it. You're going to have some institutions and things like that, but I owed the IRS 80 grand. Let me tell you, they were on my resentment list. You know, they were one of the top 10. So most of that stuff is going to make the list. And the good news is there's no reason to get stuck in terms of making a list. Here's the rub with the 8-step. It's telling me I'm willing to make amends to all of them. And my sponsor in the 8-step will ask me that question. Are you willing to go to any length for victory over alcohol? And I know the right answer by now because I've been in AA for a while. So I lie to him. Yes, sir. You bet. Right away, sir. Can't wait to make those amends. But I am lying because there's really 3 lists, aren't there? List number 1, I'm willing to make those amends. Usually the people that have seen me get sober, I know they approve of me. It's probably going to go okay. List number 2, I'm not sure. Could go either way. I hurt these people pretty bad, and they haven't seen me in a while. They probably got a freeze frame stuck in their mind the last time they saw me. And I think about that moment and go, ooh, yeah, I don't know if I want to see them. So I'm not sure. And list number 3, oh, hell no, not going to happen. Let's be honest. I'm never making amends to the IRS. I'm never going back to that boss that I ripped off and took his best clients with me when I quit the job. You know, it can't happen. I can't go back to those guys I was in that import and export business with. I mean, that could be unhealthy for a lot of people, including me. So I've got a problem, and that's okay. The thing that I've got to make sure I don't do is I delay on making the amends in the 9th step based on this. I'm not ready to make all my amends, so I won't make any. What my sponsor had me do was start making the amends that I was willing to make right away. And the reason that's so important is a couple of reasons. Well, the biggest reason is I'm grandiose. And grandiose doesn't mean I think I'm better than anyone. It just means I'm an exaggerator of my own situation. If it's bad, it's the worst. You know, if I've got trouble, oh, it's big trouble. I know you got trouble. My trouble's really big. I'm grandiose. Everything's out of proportion. So when I think about these amends, I know they're going to be horrible. Oh, my God, it's just going to go horribly. And they go better than I think. And the very fact that they go better than I think gives me a little bit of faith, gives me a little bit of willingness that category number two, perhaps someday with God's help, I'll be able to make those amends too. And category number three, the ones I'm never going to make, the door to willingness starts to open. And I think not today, and I don't know when, but maybe someday even these will be possible, which is great progress. It's the spiritual progress we're looking for in the steps, right? I go from I'm never, ever, ever going to do it to maybe someday. That's a big move, and that takes place when you get a couple of amends done, in my experience. The other reason that it's so important I start making amends quickly, and when I say quickly, I mean as quickly to when you finish your fifth step to when you start making those amends. And that's because I think when we're done with our fifth step, we're at that point of recovery, I think we're in very dangerous territory. Because for a lot of us, when we finish our fifth step, we feel like we really accomplished something. There's a sense of, wow, I really got some stuff done here. And you have. But keep in mind, we have to never forget that what we're trying to do is fulfill our commitment we made in the third step. I made a decision to turn my will and life over to the care of God, simply as I understood him. I made that in step three. The process of how I do that is steps 4 through 9. If I stop at the fifth step, I'm not even halfway through. And the problem with it is, page 39 in the big book says, the real alcoholic will absolutely be unable to stop drinking on the basis of self-knowledge. But what do you really have after you're done with your fifth step? But the purest form of self-knowledge you've ever had. And it's dangerous because it feels powerful. It feels like you've accomplished something. And you have, but only if you move forward. So it's very important that I get into those ninth step exercises as quickly as possible. A couple of things I want to talk about with the ninth step from the reading in the book. Two things. One, I think the most important word in the ninth step in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the word is demonstration. Now it's used in two different places. In one place it says it doesn't matter if a man throws us out of his office. We've made our demonstration. It's water over the dam. But more importantly, there's a place where it says our man will be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than our talk of spiritual discoveries. Most people would rather see a sunset than listen to a sermon. And how important is that? Because I'm the guy that wants to say, hey, I'm sorry I stole your car, stole your dough, slept with your girl, but I'm sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got God now. We're all good, right? And my sponsor was a big believer in the demonstration of goodwill. It's one thing to say you've changed. How are you going to show them you changed? How are you going to make it right? And that doesn't mean I need to preempt people and tell them how I think this amends is going to go, but I better have an idea of a couple of things. How I think I hurt them and what I think I need to do to make that right. I have to get a little skin in the game. I have to think about that. So I think that that word's incredibly important. And then in dealing with my fear in making these amends, okay, top of page 77, will save a self-centered alcoholic like myself from my self-centered fear, because here's my fear. If I make these amends, what will happen to me? If I make these amends, they might be mad at me. If I make these amends, I might be broke forever. If I make these amends, I might go to jail. If I make these amends, I might hurt my family. If I make these amends, I'll never get a girlfriend. The list goes on forever with the self-centered fears. But page 77 tells me my real purpose for making the amends. At the moment, I'm trying to put my life in order, top of page 77. But this is not an end in itself. My real purpose is to fit myself to be a maximum service to God and the people about me. Oh, yeah. I almost forgot. I'm an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. My very life as an ex-problem drinker depends on my constant thought of others and what I can do to help meet their needs. Page 20. Anything that disrupts my relationship with this power we talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous, we can label infinitely grave. So I cannot let anything come between me and this power. And the real reason that I'm making amends isn't to get out of trouble, isn't so that they forgive me, isn't that my dreams come true. It's that I can sweep away the wreckage that's accumulated and blocks me off from God, accumulated from a life of running on self-will. And what the amends will do is they will clear out that path, and I will be able to commune with God without having all that filth between me and my higher power. So if I'm going to serve, if I'm going to stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, if I'm going to get the whole gift of this program, the amends are infinitely important, and absolutely they're not expendable. And like my friend Sheldon F. says, there's a big difference between making most of your amends and making all of your amends. So I started making these amends, and luckily my sponsor had lined me out in a specific way that he wanted it done. And by the way, this doesn't mean, I don't want you to think that this was a pleasant process for me. I didn't want to make amends. I want to be very clear about it. I had a lot of fear about making the amends. I was the guy that, isn't it enough that we're sober? You've asked so much of us. You know, I've given up alcohol and all that other crap, and now you want me to go and be a Boy Scout and spend the rest of my life saying I'm sorry. This is ridiculous. This is penance is what it is. So I didn't have a good attitude about it. But I was learning some stuff in Alcoholics Anonymous through the tutelage of a sponsor long before I was formally on the ninth step. And I experienced the power of the amends probably when I was 3.5 months sober. And I hadn't even finished writing my inventory and sharing it yet with my sponsor. And I got sober in my family's house, my older sister, Patricia, specifically. And my sponsor came up to me and said, what are you doing to say thank you to your sister for her letting you get sober in her house? And I said, well, I'm not drinking. And he said, well, that's mighty big of you. He said, go home tonight and ask her if there's anything you can do for her. So I went home that night and I said, hey, Pat, my sponsor wants to know if there's anything I can do to say thank you. And she said, well, you can paint my house. And I said, your whole house? And she said, yeah. And I said, I got to get back to my sponsor. And so I went back to my sponsor and said, this crazy woman wants me to paint her two-story, 3,800-square-foot house. She's nuts. And he said, is she buying the paint? I said, well, I assume. He goes, you got off easy. Paint her house. And then he walked away real dismissively, which is how he ended conversations with me. I just see his bald head going off in the distance. And I yelled at the back of his bald head. I said, hey, I'm not even on the ninth step yet. I thought this program was suggested, and that was a mistake. I found out, sponsors don't like that. He got back in my personal space and explained to me that when he talks to me, it's direction, and he'll let me know when I pass into the suggestion phase of the program. So now I'm painting her house. And I want to be clear. I'm in the living amends process of the program, and I don't even know I'm in the living amends. This is what I think. Why is my sponsor mad at me? Why is he making me do this? How is this any of his business? But you see, what my sponsor knew is I had problems with my sister. I had damaged her a great deal. I had hurt her over the years so deeply that in a sober state, I had a very difficult time being around her. I mean, we could only be in the same place at the same time, breathing the same air for so long, and then one of us would be looking at our shoes. There was this uncomfortability, this tension between us. And although she was thrilled that I was sober, and I was happy that I had the opportunity to be more active in my family's life, things weren't right. And I was talking to my sponsor about the uncomfortability I felt around my sister. And I started painting that house. And I don't know what it did for my sister. I can tell you what she said. She said it caused a great healing. But I know what it did for me. It seemed like the further I got into that process, the more time I could spend with my sister, being in the same place at the same time, breathing the same air. And when I finished painting her house, it wasn't like we were even Steven. But Alcoholics Anonymous and the actions contained in the amends process, long before I was even formally on the ninth step, gave me back somebody in my life that's one of the most important people that have ever been in my life. But it was a direct result of those actions, that demonstration of goodwill that my sponsor believed so strongly on. And my sister talked about that later. She said, when you were painting my house with a fairly good attitude, I couldn't believe it. You didn't want anything. You didn't want any money. You weren't working an angle. And you weren't even really in trouble with me at the moment. You seemed to genuinely be doing it because you were trying to be helpful and you felt bad about what happened between us. You see, our actions will speak so loudly that what we say will never matter. It's the actions that change the world. So I started to learn a little bit about that. And my sponsor had a very specific way that he wanted me to go about making these amends. And he said, the first thing is you'll make an appointment with everybody. There'll be no ambushes, which is important because some of us don't know that. Some of us just, we take advantage of the opportunity. You know, we're over at a family's house and somebody's there we don't expect to see. And we go, oh, well, this is a good time to make amends. And we just, boom, ambush them with the amends. That's not what we do. You know, my sponsor explained to me the problem with the amends for the typical alcoholic is we are handcuffed. And what we're handcuffed with is our perception of reality, right? My sponsor said, if you drank as much whiskey as you claim to have drank and you suffered as many blackouts as you claim to have suffered, who knows what really happened? We have to get to the truth. And to get to the truth, you're going to have to involve the people you hurt. You're going to have to secure their permission. So I had to go back to the people, every one of them that I was going to make amends to and make an appointment and tell them why I was coming, that I was lucky enough to become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I broke my anonymity with every person I made amends to. I said, part of what we do is make restitution for harms done, and I feel like I've harmed you. But I'm only armed with my perception of how I harmed you and how badly I harmed you. And if you're brave enough and courageous enough, I'd like you to take a few days and think about how that behavior affected you and what you think I could do to possibly start making that right. And when my sponsor lined me out on this, I said, this is a bad idea. But how bright, how genius is it to involve the other people? Because we'll never get to the truth on our own. Because I'm the guy that wants to ambush you. I'm the guy that wants to show up at Aunt Sally's house. Hey, Aunt Sally, how you doing? Hey, listen. I want to make amends to you and then tell her about all the horrible things I've done to her, most of what she already knows about, some of what she doesn't. And at the end of it, I say to her, Aunt Sally, can you tell me how my behavior affected you and what I can do to make it right? Keeping in mind, Aunt Sally's had a front row seat for the destruction of my life, and I'm sober for the first time in probably forever. You think she's going to rock the boat with the truth? Or is she going to say something like this? Oh, baby, baby. You don't have to worry about a thing. We just wanted you to be happy. You just keep going to the A&A. You don't worry about that money you owe me. You don't worry about any of that stuff. That's all in the past. We're just so happy you're sober. And as a self-centered alcoholic, I think this to myself. Woo! That was close. And I don't realize I've just screwed myself out of the biggest gift you'll ever get from making the amends. It's something we place the highest value on in AA. We call it the truth. And I'll never get there on my own. And that became very apparent to me as I made these amends. I remember sitting with my sister, and I made amends for stealing her car over the years and stealing her money and being a craphead alcoholic brother and missing the holidays and missing the graduations and never being anyone you could count on. And I got to the end of it and asked how I could make it right and asked how I affected her. And she said, you think this is how you've hurt me? And I said, yeah, I think it's fairly accurate. And she said, you couldn't be more wrong. And then she continued. She said, you don't know what it's like. She goes, you don't know what it's like to love somebody as much as I love you. And I'm watching you die. And I ask you how you're doing. And you say, couldn't be better. You don't know what it's like. When the phone rings in my house and it's after 10 o'clock at night, I know it's them calling me to say, I'm never going to see my baby brother again. You don't know what it's like. And while she's telling me this, her eyes are filled with tears. And the tears are rolling down her cheeks. And I can watch her, a physical representation of somebody reliving the horrors of loving an alcoholic right in front of me. She's feeling that pain again, that worry, that fear, that uncertainty, that never knowing what's going to happen next to your loved one. And I'm watching her experience that. And I got to tell you, it changed me. Right then, right now, no time lapse. Something happened to me. When I saw the look in my sister's eyes, the guy that came to AA saying the only person I ever hurt was myself changed. And I don't know, I didn't have the vocabulary at the time, but I do today. And a feeling came over me that conspired to say this and nothing less. I never want to see that look on another human being's face and know that I'm the one that put it there. Because I knew I had done that. And I knew that it was never going to be taken away. I knew that she was going to have to live with those memories. And all the good that could have been in all those years I drank all that whiskey and roared like a tornado through their life was lost to us. And there was nothing I could do about it. But I could focus on the future. And I could make it right where I could. And so my sister and I talked about what I could do to make those things right. And I'll tell you, the amends aren't done in one appointment. You know, I've been sober for 28 years, September 16th, 1991. And I'm still making amends to my family. And I make those amends by being an active participant in my family. I make those amends by being available to them. You see, there's another type of amends where the family's concerned, I believe, that I really needed to consider. And it's the sins of omission. You know, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says every single one of us is blessed with certain skills, aptitudes, and abilities. I think God dropped me right where he wanted to drop me, right in the family he wanted to drop me in. There's no mistakes in God's world. And he gave me a certain role to play, and I advocated my responsibilities. I was supposed to be a certain type of son, a certain type of brother, a certain type of nephew. I wasn't any of those things. I was given the opportunity to play that role in my family, and I missed the boat. But now I have the second chance, the wonderful gift that the alcoholic's given, a chance to live a completely different kind of life. And part of what I've tried to do is be the guy I should have been all the time along. I don't get any points for that. I don't get any attaboys for that. I'm simply trying to live the way I should have always lived within that family. But there's so much work left to do, isn't there, with the amends? So I go and I make those amends, and I set them up with everybody in the exact same way. I make the appointment, and I give people the opportunity to talk to me about how my behavior really affected them and what I could do to make it right. And what I found out is most people were perturbed or annoyed by what I thought was the thing that hurt them. But what hurt them was they thought I was somebody. I'm a guy that with my lips, I tell you I love you. And my actions tell you, though, that I care about you not. And they said that the pain was caused from never knowing who they were dealing with. The pain was caused by them never thinking I was going to do them dirty in the way that I did them dirty. And not all amends go well. In fact, I think I got more out of the amends that didn't go well than the ones that did. And I know that's strange to say, but I got to tell you, I remember making amends to one of my amends that I was really afraid to make was to an ex-employer. And this guy was like a father to me. You know what I mean? He was in my life very young when I went into the workforce. He gave me some opportunities that nobody would have given somebody as young as I was. And because of that, I found myself able to, you know, find myself in a management position very young, having the ability to learn some skills that still serve me to this day. But I was an alcoholic, and my alcoholism was progressing. And I worked for this guy for about 9 years. And it got to the point where it was very obvious we were going to have to, you know, he was going to have to fire me or I was going to have to get sober, one or the other. And I knew I wasn't going to get sober. And so I made up a plan to leave that company. And not only did I quit that company, but when I quit, I took his two biggest clients with me. After he treated me like a son, after he bent over backwards for me, after he hung in there with me, when everyone around him was saying, you need to fire this guy and cut him loose, he wouldn't quit on me. And that's what I do to you when you love me. When you hang in, when everybody tells you you're a fool, I sting you. And I got to go make amends to this guy. And he wouldn't talk to me. I had to make 4 approaches before I actually got in front of him. First time I called, wouldn't take the call. Second time I called, he said, listen, I know he called. Tell him I don't want to talk to him. Third time I called, he said, stop bothering me. Said that was the message you relayed to me. Fourth time I called, his secretary said, he'll see you as long as you promise to never bother him again. Just wants to get rid of you. So I made an appointment. And I sat down with this man I had done so, I treated so poorly, so disrespectfully. And I made amends for everything that he already knew that I did and some things that he didn't know I had done. And I got to the end of it, and he was looking up at the ceiling the whole time I talked, like he couldn't have been any less interested. And then when I finished, he said, you done? And I said, I am. And he said, well, if what you're telling me is true and you're actually sober, I'm happy for you. Good for you. But let me tell you something. I don't want anything from you. There's nothing you can do to make it right. The only thing I want from you is when you leave here, lose my number. Never darken my doorway again. But when you leave, I want you to know why I feel this way. You know, before you came into my life, my whole approach to business was the family approach. I treated my employees like family. I got involved in their problems. I always tried to think what I could do for them. I tried to create an atmosphere where we all pulled together as a team. But after what you did to me, I realized I was a fool. And so after that, it became business only. I never let anybody close to me the way I let you close to me. No one will ever get the chance to stick me in the back with a knife again. So we're done. And I got up and I left, and I was shook up. Because like I said, I've been kind of on a winning streak. You know what I mean? The amends have been going better than I thought with everybody. And here's a guy that told me in no uncertain terms how I had changed him, and not for the better. And I sat in my car and I thought about what just happened. And, first chance I got, I talked to my sponsor about it. And he said, how'd that amends go? I go, not well. And I told him what happened. He goes, that might be the best amends you'll ever make in your life. And I said, why would you say that? It went horrible. He goes, you found out more about what you really did to people with that guy. That guy really told you the truth. And I said, well, how am I ever going to make this right? He goes, you're not. And you're going to have to learn to walk with that. And maybe that'll help you stay sober. Maybe you'll remember how you really live when you're under the lash of active alcoholism and what you're capable of again. And I got to tell you, here's a guy who is a beautiful human being. And all the people that he's met in business since me that have had the privilege of working with this guy are never going to know what I knew, are never going to know the kindness I felt, the understanding, the compassion, because he's going to withhold those gifts that God gave him because I left him with a resentment. So not every amends that we make will go our way. The big book also says most alcoholics owe money. We do not dodge our creditors. That's the point in the book when we're reading that we slam the book closed. When I got sober, I owed the Internal Revenue Service $80,000. This is 1991. I don't know how much I owed the state of California, and I probably owed another 20, 30 grand to everybody. You know, it's like that old joke when you ask your sponsor, who do I make amends to? He says, I don't know. Who did you know? And it was kind of like that. Like everybody's on the list. And I don't know how I'm ever going to pay back the IRS. I mean, if you've got a half a million in the bank, you know, it's tough, but you write the check. But when you are living at your sister's house, you haven't worked in a year, and you don't have a car, and you got warrants for your arrest in two counties, and you owe the IRS 80 grand, and when you get back to work, you're making minimum wage with taxes taken out, you know it's never going to be okay. And that's all right. There's a funny thing that happens that I found. I entered into a payment agreement with the Internal Revenue Service to pay them $100 a month. And if I gave them $100 a month, I would technically never pay off the debt. The penalties and interest would keep accumulating, and I would die owing them more than when I started. But I was willing to go to any length for victory over alcohol. My sponsor told me, take the action. Just take the action. And I remember writing them that check for $100 and it feeling so insufficient. And I thought to myself, oh, good, $79,900 to go, and knew it was never going to be okay. But you see, I had forgotten. I'd forgotten that the big book says the power of God goes deep. I'd forgotten that in we agnostics it says God is everything or else he's nothing. What's our decision? I'd forgotten all that. And I don't believe that God is an employment counselor, and I don't believe that God worries about how much money I owe, but I do believe this. There's a power that runs this place that I can't explain how it works. But I know when I started making those financial amends, I was hopelessly in debt. And what $100 bought me was my dignity. What $100 bought me was grace. Because before I sent him that $100, I was waking up in terror most mornings thinking about, is today the day they find me? Is today the day that I go down for all this money I owe? And the minute there's something that happens with an alcoholic who's been hiding behind the hedge of life for years, and you go through the process and you stand up straight like a real person and you let everybody get a good look at you and you slowly raise your hand in the air and you say this, it was me. I did it. And I'm here to make it right. I think when we do that with our families, with our creditors, with our exes, with the world, I think the universe sees that. I think the universe sees honest effort. And I think God sees that. And I had a sincere desire to set right the wrong. Didn't know how I was going to do it, but a sincere desire. And the moment I started making financial amends, I started getting better jobs. And I started making more money. Now, I didn't have any more money, because as my sponsor explained to me, oh, Don, don't worry. They don't want your money. And I said, they don't want my money? He goes, no, they want their money. And they wanted their money. So I had more money to give them. So I know what it's like to be broke for 5-6 years, sober and Alcoholics Anonymous, where every extra dime you make, you send to your financial amends. And the old timers told me, you can do this the easy way, or you can do this the hard way. I said, what's the hard way? They said, dodging it. Doing it as slowly as you can, so you hold on as much of your little money as you can. The other is to go out on faith. Give them everything. Live within your means. Live like a guy who's hopelessly in debt. Drive a crappy car. Make your sandwiches and take them to work. So I lived like a guy who was hopelessly in debt. And I got better jobs that led to better jobs, that led to more income, that led to better earnings. And I was able to pay that debt off, the debt I thought I'd never pay off. I was able to pay off all the money I owed in 5 or 6 years. And you fast forward 5 or 6 years, it's an interesting time, because by this time, I've fallen in love. By this time, I'm engaged, and now I'm married to the beautiful Eileen, the sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. By this time, a couple of knucklehead drunks are in a first-time homebuyers program, and they're going to give us a loan. We lay in bed at night and giggle and go, they gave us a loan. Are they insane? Do they know who we are? But we had taken the actions. We cleaned up our credit. We had done the things that Alcoholics Anonymous in the amends process said. We do not dodge our creditors. And I didn't do any of it to buy a house. I didn't do any of it so my wife would be happy. I did it so I could stay sober and not have stuff between me and God. But the side effect of that was I got a real life, which I wasn't looking for. And I remember laying in bed with my wife, and we were going to be closing escrow on the house in a couple of weeks. And she said, you better call the IRS and find out how much you owe them. We don't want to get tripped up at the finish line. And by this time, I have my own agent. You know what I mean? I got a guy, I got his direct line named Bill. Nice guy. So I called Bill up, who I've been dealing with for years, and I said, hey, Bill, it's Don. He goes, Don, how are you? I said, great, Bill. How are your kids? He said, good, growing like weeds. Thanks for asking. Bill's a nice guy. You find out God's kids work at the IRS. And so I asked Bill. I told Bill what was going on. I said, I just want to check my balance. He put me on hold. He came back, and he said, funniest thing, Don. He goes, you've actually overpaid. We owe you $400. Would you like me to send you a check? Now, if you've sent every spare nickel you have to the IRS for 5 or 6 years, your answer sounds a little bit like this. You bet your ass. And, when I started making financial amends, I asked my sponsor, because I hated making them. You know, it meant I was going to be broke for forever, I thought. And I asked my sponsor, when am I going to feel better about this? Because I never felt good. I never wrote a check to anybody I owed money to and went, I'm doing the right thing. I never hated it. Hated it. And my sponsor always said the same thing. When are you going to feel better? I don't know, Don. Someday. And which I thought that's what you say when you don't have a real answer. Let me tell you, when I found out I paid back the IRS, I called my sponsor up. And I said, you remember when you told me I'd feel better one day? He said, yeah, I go, today's the day. And some of our amends are like that. You want to know when you're going to feel better about it? When it's complete. And doesn't that make sense? Isn't that more logical? That we're going to feel better when the amends is complete. And so I made all of those consequence amends. The amends that you bring into Alcoholics Anonymous that need to be made from what happens living in that self-will and that alcoholic drinking life, you know, and everything that comes with it. But what do the amends look like in my life today? Am I still willing to make amends? Let me tell you about amends today. If I've sponsored you for over 6 months, I probably made amends to you. Why? Because I'm human. And it is my process of discovery. I will go through inventory in a 10th step. And in that inventory that I do on a daily basis, I will find out that occasionally I hurt one of God's kids. My big one in my life today is inconsideration. And that doesn't mean I'm a bad guy. It means what the word says. I don't consider you. Because I'm selfish and I'm self-centered and I just roll over people. I don't even know you're there. And luckily the 10th step will slow me down enough that I will realize I occasionally hurt people. And I will have to go back to them and make amends and ask them how my behavior affected them and ask them what I can do to make it right. And let me tell you something I learned about the amends way back when I was new and making them. It's not an apology. In fact, the apology is the smallest aspect of the amends. It's a politeness. It's a kindness. But it's unimportant. It's not what we're doing. An amends is when we try to figure out, as the textbook definition says, what am I going to fix or what am I going to change? When I go to make amends to somebody, I better have an idea what I'm trying to fix or what I'm trying to change in that relationship. And I will need the help of others to get there. And I've been married for 24 years. I'm an expert at making amends. Trust me. And I've had to ask my wife, how would you like me to say that to you? Because I don't know. And when she tells me, I want you to say it like this, or I need you to do that, or I need you to do this, it becomes a spiritual piece of business. It becomes something that I bring into my prayer and meditation and go to God and say, I don't know how to live this way. And so the amends continue. And I'll tell you just a quick story. I'll tell you about the last real big amends that I made, a big formal amends or whatever that I made, and then I'll turn it over for quick talk. So, about a year ago, I had to have a colonoscopy. We won't get into that, but anyone that's had one knows what I'm talking about. You don't eat for 24 hours, and there's some other things involved. It's not pleasant. So I show up for my appointment at the appointed time to check in for this procedure. And the very nice lady behind the counter says, oh, yes, we see you right here. You're down for 3:30. Listen, we're running about 2 hours late, so just have a seat. And we'll get right to you. And what I said was this. Well, that's great. No problem. I understand these things happen. Hey, you know when it would have been great to know that? And she said, no, when? I said, when I was sitting comfortably on my couch instead of having to spend the next 2 hours sitting in your nasty waiting room because you can't get your stuff together to be able to schedule people properly. How long have you been doing this job? And when do you think you'll become proficient at it? As I'm doing this, my wife has got my arm, and she's pulling me, and I'm yanking my arm away from my wife, and I'm just lighting this woman up. And finally, my wife is screaming, sit down. I'm like, I don't want to sit down. Like I'm a six-year-old boy, and I go outside, and I'm pacing, and you know, 2 hours later, I go in, and I have the procedure, and then I go home, and I wake up the next day, and I'm thinking about, I'm just mortified. I can't believe I acted that way. 27 years sober. Boy, I should send GSO a postcard. That's what 27 years looks like. And I got to make amends. I talked to my sponsor about it. He goes, oh, yeah, you got to clean that up. And I don't know how I'm going to do it, man. I don't know the woman's name. I don't know nothing. And I couldn't figure. So I figure I'm just going to show up. and see if I can make an appointment with her if she's busy. Like, I'm not going to make the amends, but I'm just going to show up. And I don't know how to show up. So I think to myself, well, everybody likes donuts, right? Isn't that like a fact of life? So I go to my favorite donut shop and I buy a dozen donuts and I show up at this hospital setting. And there she is at the counter. I couldn't believe it. And I walk up to her and I go, hi. I give her my name. I said, I was here yesterday and I spoke to you in a manner that's unacceptable. And I'm here to make amends for that. And I said, do you remember? And she looks up to me and she says, nah, I really don't remember you. We get a lot of people here. And I go, well, let me refresh your memory. And I said a couple of things I said. She goes, oh, you. And I go, yeah. And I made my amends. And I gave her the donuts and I said, I didn't know what to do. I said, usually people like donuts. They're yours to do. You can share them. You can keep them. Just consider it a demonstration of goodwill. And please believe, I feel horrible about the way I talk to you. And if there's anything I can do to make that right, you just let me know and I will do it. And I feel so bad. You don't deserve that. And she looks at me and she cocks her head. And she said, honey, you don't have to do anything. She goes, I've been doing this job for 25 years. I get you big, tough guys in here every day. You haven't eaten in a day. You're like little babies whining. I'm completely used to it. I didn't even notice it. But I'll tell you this. 25 years, every now and then, a guy like you is rude to me. And you're the first one to come back and say you're sorry. And she leans forward and she says, you a friend of Bill W's? True story. So you never know who's watching and you never know how you're going to affect people. And if you take those little moments in life and you're willing to eat that humility sandwich and go to try to make it right. Now, I'm not saying I'm never going to light somebody up again or be rude or inconsiderate. But I think because I'm willing to make amends like that, I'm going to do it a lot less. Because there's a spiritual hangover, a humility that comes with those amends. When I walked away from that woman, I didn't feel all good about myself. I felt like this. I said a prayer as I walked to the car. God, you're going to have to help me because I don't want that to ever happen again. It becomes a spiritual piece of business, how we live, how we talk to others, how we conduct ourselves. If we make the amends. If we don't, I think we go into justification and rationalization. Nobody's perfect. God's not finished with me yet. It's progress, not perfection. And we continue to roll through the world like a tornado. We step on the toes of our fellows, and we justify and rationalize our own bad action. And I can't live that way, because it'll take a guy like me back to the drink. And anything is preferable to that. Thanks for listening.
Thank you so much, Don. I'm Erica and I'm an alcoholic. Oh my God, this was perfect tonight. Wow, so I just want to say thank you. You did an amazing job. I'm sitting here just agreeing with so much of what you're saying. And I just got done making like a lot of my financial amends. And I know like, the feeling that you get, like I was like sending my credit score, like I would screenshot my credit score to show like, you know, my mom or like, like my number's never gone there before. And it just feels so good to be able to do that, you know. It took me a long time. So I agree with you, you know, you never want to make those. But who was I hurting is the question, you know. And that last amends, you know, you never know where you're going to see one of us. And that is just like, I got an, oh my God, text when you said that from someone. So, I appreciate you taking your time with us tonight. You gave us an amazing message. If anybody would like to share, please, go to the participants section of your screen and tap on to raise hand. Bob, you can go ahead.
Hi, I'm Bob, and I'm an alcoholic. Glad to be here, grateful to be sober. Thanks for your talk, Don. Definitely appreciate it. You always have a great message on point. And I love that you stress all the benefits that you get from the ninth step. And it's no coincidence that we get all those ninth step promises from it. My question for you is, you know, I have a lot of amends still to make with family. I made most of them. I have some new ones. I mean, it's harder in sobriety to make continuing amends. You know, that now that I'm this spiritual icon here of the family, I'm still messing up. But my question to you is, I had some theft items early on from members of the family. Is that something that you would make a direct amends to it, or will you try to do an indirect amends and get the money someplace else? Would you confront a family member and let them know that you stole some money or something like that?
Yeah, I'd absolutely. Look, here's the deal. May direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when do so when you injure them or others. We are never the others. That's not why they wrote that. And a lot of people have used that perceived loophole. I'm not saying you're doing that. I just want to get that out. That we think, hey, that could be bad for me. You know, we have a pretty good relationship today, and I'd hate to damage myself or take the joy away of them feeling good about me. Usually underneath all of that is fear. Yeah. So I have to tell the truth unless it's going to damage them in a way that – but in most cases, people appreciate the honesty and they appreciate the dough even more. But yeah, I have enough experience with thinking that was wrong. I want to be clear. I thought that was wrong. I made a lot of amends with the honesty my sponsor described, and I thought it was too much. And boy, was I wrong. But you know, Bob, I know you and we're friends. You definitely got to talk to your sponsor, come up with an approach. But yeah, I'm a big believer in the truth. It won't just set us free, it sets them free.
Thanks, guys. iPhone Jennifer.
Hi, Jennifer, alcoholic. Thank you so much. You absolutely took the fear that I was having and the anxiety out of the amends process, and I'm actually excited for it. But I have a question. You said that you kept contacting that ex-boss and finally he accepted to see you. How many times do you have to keep asking for them to meet with you if they don't want to?
It's kind of one of those chicken or egg questions. I mean, I could be cute and say, well, I don't know. I mean, how long do you want to stay sober? And, you know, but the reality is this. I made the approach. It wasn't a big deal. I made a phone call to try to talk to the guy and get an appointment. He wouldn't talk to me. 3 months later, you know, I wrote myself a note. 3 months later, I did it again.
Honey.
3 months after that, I did it again. And I would have done it probably because people change, right? I would have kept trying to get in touch with him as long as I knew where he was. You know, I would have sent him a postcard. I would have sent him a note. I would have done it until he saw me or until I died, you know, because it was unfinished business. And, but I don't know many people that go for four approaches. I always say, get to the second approach and call me, because most people, you know, we don't have a problem getting a hold of. It's unusual that you have to go. But this was a very, very big amends. So this wasn't, you know, a glancing, I stepped on your toes 20 years ago. This is a big deal. So, and sometimes we think if we make the approach and they're not willing, we're done. It's not true. They weren't expecting us to call. Keep that in mind. It's not unusual that our first approach, they swat us away like they have a tennis racket. Mm-hmm. But the second approach, usually they're willing to see us. That's all I got.
Thank you. Levy?
Hi, everyone. My name is Levy Russo, and I'm an alcoholic. And it's only by the grace of God and Alcoholics Anonymous that I'm alive and well, sober, and recovered from the seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Hey, Don, thank you so very much. You know, I had to make amends to the FAA. Gulp. And, you know, I had to go down to Atlanta, and my attorney said, hell no. And my sponsor said, how free do you want to be? Right. And again, like you, you know, the bald head walking away from me, really dismissive, and I don't like that. And but anyway, I did. I made that amend, and I could have been remanded on the spot, thrown in jail. And you know what? Interestingly enough, there was a man on that panel who understood what I was trying to do. He said to me, I'm a sober man in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said, so what we want you to do is to stay sober one day at a time, and we want you to work with other pilots. And so that's what I do now. But I have a question for you. You said something about living amends, and I was taught that we don't have living amends, that the living amends is the third part of step 12, these principles. Do you have an opinion on that?
Yeah. I think a rose by any other name would still smell as sweet. It's absolutely the third portion of the 12th step, practicing these principles in all our affairs. And that's why I was very clear to say, listen, I don't get a pat on the back or an attaboy for doing what people call the living amends, right? But I think this, if I've come to the point through the steps that I realize the damage I've caused in the life of, say, my family members, and I can be willing to own that and be willing to realize, as the book says, in the amends process, we think a man who says sobriety is enough is unthinking. He's like the farmer who comes out of his cyclone cellar to face the devastation of his farm, only to say, don't see anything wrong here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing? No, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead, and we must take the lead. And then it says that we sit down with the family and honestly analyze the past as we now see it. I'm supposed to sit down with my family and talk about what happened and talk about what we can do moving forward. And so I'm a, you know, we get hung up on terms. You know, somebody says living amends and they go, oh, there are no living amends. That's just the way we're supposed to. I don't care about the labels. The approach, the spirit of the amends process is long period of reconstruction ahead. That's why I said it's not a one and done. You don't go and show up and say, hey, I'm sorry. How can I make it right? Here's the check and skip down the road. What are you going to do to make a demonstration of goodwill? And sometimes that takes years and years, the rest of our life, in my case, in some instances, you know, or to stand on the ready for that spiritual demonstration that we live differently. But the book says long period of reconstruction ahead with the family. The same.
Thank you, Don. Graham, just unmute. There you go.
Hi there. How are we doing? Thanks to the group for having the meeting on. Yourself, Erica, for chairing, Linda, for doing the reading, Mickey as well. And absolutely great share. I always thought I was just hurting myself, you know, nobody else. It was just me and alcohol, and I didn't hurt anybody else. I didn't see the carnage round about me at all. And it's so funny, like, you're saying, like, faith without works is dead, as it says in the book type stuff, and you're willing to make amends, you know, and it's easy enough to do it with the family and friends that are close to us. And then you've got that wee group, it's a second group. I might hurt a wee bit, I don't really want to do that. And then you've got the sort of third group, oh, I'm absolutely never ever going to do that at all. But like you were saying, like, I'm a wee sort of Shelley a guy type thing. I'm like a wee crispy M&M, you know. If you crack the outer Shelley, there's nothing inside when I'm an alcoholic. There's nothing inside. But since I've come into Alcoholics Anonymous, I've started to grow inside. And I build upon that, and I try to make amends on a daily basis. And you were talking about I'm painting stuff for my sister and stuff like that. But it's funny enough, you were talking about being in hospital for a surgery and stuff. That was the same as well. And it got cancelled, and I could see my name up at the top of the board, but obviously there was something more urgent come in. Inside, I'm fuming, but I don't say anything, I don't react. I could take it all internal. But totally identified with everything. It was a great share. I'm just glad to be here and sober. Thank you.
I can't hear anything. I don't know if anybody else can.
Erica, are you there?
You left the
I don't, buddy. I'm sorry I missed your talk, but I don't see any other hands up. And Don, you can hear me, correct?
Yeah, I can hear you, Ralph.
It's Karen. I have my hand up.
Okay, Karen, go ahead.
Hi, Don. It's Karen from Edmonton. So
hi, Karen.
Good to see
you. How are you, dear?
I'm good. I just have a quick question. You mentioned something about making amends to your sponsees.
Yep.
So how common is that for sponsors? If
not as common as it should be. Unfortunately, sometimes we think we're in a position of authority. This is just what I, this is observational. This isn't judgmental. Not judging. I'm just reporting that, I have to make amends when I've done wrong. I've got to make amends when I've done something harmful. I've got to make amends when I'm inconsiderate, dishonest, resentful, or afraid. All of these things, regardless of who's involved. And I have seen a hesitancy sometimes with AA members making amends to their sponsees because they feel it will weaken their position of authority or perfection. And the reality is I want the guys I sponsor to understand I'm a drunk that didn't have a drink today, that we're shoulder to shoulder in this, and regardless of how much time I have, I'm no better, no worse. I'm just like you. And I think one of the ways to really be helpful as a sponsor is to be transparent and human and show your perfect imperfection. And so occasionally I'm inconsiderate. Occasionally I'm short with guys I sponsor. Occasionally I say things that I think are hilarious and then later on go, you know, you probably could have said that another way. I'm a guy that will go back and clean it up. I'm a guy that will take responsibility. If it comes up in my mind in a 10th or 11th step exercise that maybe I should have treated that person different that I sponsor, or, and sometimes it can be, for me, it could be something like I'm in the middle of a busy business day and I took your call and I really shouldn't have because I didn't have the time or energy for you at that moment and I was short with you. And you called me for help, and I was short, and I was inconsiderate. And I will go back, and I will clean that up, and it makes me a better sponsor is my point. But I just – it's just something that I – you know, I talked to other guys that sponsor – you know, sponsor a lot more guys than me, and I said, do you make amends to your sponsees? And they go, oh, never. And I'm like, how's that possible? So what you're saying is you make mistakes in other areas of your life with other people, but never with your sponsees? How's that logical? That's all I'm saying. Not a big issue for me. It's just something I've gotten a lot out of by taking responsibility for my behavior, regardless of who's involved. You know, that's all.
Thank you, Don. Karen, I apologize. My mute was on and I was talking to you, but you couldn't hear me before. Mickey, go ahead.
Hi, Don. Thank you. I have a question, and I wanted to say something. I'm glad you said something about the getting the truth from the other person, because I was told nobody ever told me that I did good things or was helpful in a blackout. So when I'm doing amends to them, I do get the truth, because there's so much of my past I don't remember. Like, literally, it's gone.
Yep. Yep.
And the other thing, the question was, you said to make an appointment. How about to the people? Because I was always told from a lot of people that God will put the person that I need to make amends in place. If I can't get a hold of them, I can understand like family members or business, the people that I can get a hold of to make an appointment. But how about the ones I can't get a hold of? Like they said God will put them in my place in his time.
Yeah. You make an appointment wherever possible. If you can't make an appointment, like you said, it was 15 years ago, you don't even know where they're at, you don't have their number, you don't even remember their last name, could be one of those, you know. You do your due diligence, you talk to other people that might know. I'll tell you, when I started using social media in certain forms 10 years ago, I found a couple of people to make amends to that I was never able to make amends to, and I found them on Facebook. And, was actually like, oh my God, I can make the amends now. Because I had no idea where they were. They weren't in the town I remembered. I think you have to leave all your unfinished business squarely in God's hands, because God will show us what actions to take. But I think we stay prepared and we do our due diligence. And I've also, two people I found because I actually had paid a little bit of money and I went on a I did a website search with public records and was able to track them down that way. I actually hired a tax attorney at one point because I couldn't get satisfaction with the state of California in terms of being able to make financial amends to them. And I paid a guy a significant amount of money to find out how much money I owed so I could pay more money. I mean, it's like, I don't know, how important is the amends to you? And I'm not saying you're not doing that. I'm just saying talk to other AA members. One of the most underutilized assets is we're 85 years in, kids, right? We're not a new society. Make use of the old timers. Talk to the old timers that you know. Talk to your sponsor. You know, sometimes we think we can only talk to our sponsors about our stuff. I encourage my guys to talk to other, to the old timers, right? Say, hey, man, I don't have all the answers. We have so much information that we'll find somebody, I guarantee you, in AA that's had your particular experience that can direct you. That's my experience. That God will show you a way, but it'll usually be through working through others, is what I'm saying.